Hello friends, here we are. Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 89, Section A, and we're beginning with a 26-page chapter on the sign Leo. We have four signs to go in this section of the book because we are moving in the clockwise manner as the soul of the average human individual, or should we say as the consciousness, the immersed consciousness of the average individual tends to move before reorienting and moving in the direction of true soul expression. So we begin, page 285. And what we have here, he says, passing as we are into the Aquarian age, in which the spirit of Aquarius will be exemplified in its universality and its general sense of general distribution, that is, in its tendency to embrace what we consider to be the whole, the consideration of the context as a wholeness and a person's place or a group's place or a nation's place, whatever, within that context, and general distribution, it is inevitable that a point of crisis should be reached. Because when two energies are contending at the same moment, there are cross currents and counter indications. Let's kind of define this a little bit. The sense of wholeness, whether in this case it's the wholeness of humanity, that's one level of universality in Aquarius, the wholeness of the planet, or let us say even the wholeness of the solar system, about which, in occultism at least, we can know something. So a point of crisis will be reached. We've been reading under the decanates of Virgo about, interestingly, the decanates of Aquarius, and that there are sufficient number of human beings now who have reached the disciplic stage that humanity itself can be considered as a disciple, and thus will enter under the sign of the planet of crisis, one of the planets of crisis, which is Saturn. So we are considering, you know, the Leo, the opposite sign to Aquarius. What I've often said is that if we really want to understand any given sign, it's really important to understand the sign that is opposing it, and even the signs that are square to it, because in these contrasts, the true nature of the sign emerges. The true Leo type must react in a new and unique manner to the proffered opportunity. You might call it the Aquarianization of the Leo type. It is, after all, going to be what Dane Rudyard called the age of Aquarius Leo. And when I say type, I refer to those people whose sun is in Leo or who have Leo rising. So that is an important idea the Tibetan puts forward. Your type is defined by your sun sign and rising sign. Each one of us, I suppose, has a type, and our behavior is somewhat categorized, our tendencies are somewhat categorized according to our sun sign and rising sign. This is, in a way, conventional astrology, but the range of qualities involved in a categorization are much extended in the field of esoteric astrology. The reason for this is that Leo is the polar opposite of Aquarius, and the interplay of energies between these two is far more potent than at any previous time in racial history. We have talked a little bit about the idea that our solar system, our solar locus, is particularly related to the lord of the constellation Leo, since the sun is the ruler. That is probably conditions, influences, reduces, or in some way qualifies the energies coming from the constellation Leo. I think an important triangle here would be our Sirius, the initiator of our solar logos, and involved in this, the sign Leo. Perhaps the lord of the constellation Leo is greater than any lord of a solar logos. So in a way, Leo might take the preeminent position. Leo, Sirius, solar logos. Although in other ways, Leo seems to come second, at least in some of the triangles the Tibetan give, such as Sirius, Leo, Jupiter. So there is a great interplay going on between the sign of individuality and identity and the sign of the group and of world service. The interplay of energies, what really does it mean? There are patterns of energy which incline individuals and groups toward certain kinds of behavior. These energies are working out as those behaviors interact with each other, but they are all also probably working out on their own level as well, meeting in space on various levels and interacting, neutralizing, harmonizing, or combining in some way, certainly contrasting with each other. So this is the era of the individual and of the group, and when the dynamics of those two ways of behaving must be resolved. This is the most potent era thus far in human history of the individual and of the group. Probably a number of times during the Age of Aquarius, the larger Age of Aquarius, let us say, which what occurs every maybe 300,000 years or so, there has been a lesser cycle of Leo or vice versa. So these energies have always interacted, and on the human stage, since Leo is the most human of all the signs, and Aquarius has occurred many times, these energies have interacted, but never with such a consequence for the race, because we are now entering a period in which the culture of the group, which is really soul culture, will begin to dominate. So this is a fact that we are not, he says, which you are not in a position to verify. Some things we simply have to accept from DK as working hypotheses. You are not in a position to verify, but I make it as a statement of fact. It is because of this fact that you have the appearance of the dictators in various countries. This is interesting because, remember, he said he had not studied, let us say, Hitler's horoscope, but in the personal sense, but he knew that in his soul horoscope, Leo was prominent. And he Leo is related to Shambhala and to the kind of method of government we call monarchy, which comes out of Shambhala, and certain disciples of Shambhala have been listed as such and maybe are related in some way to Leo. He listed Franco, he listed Stalin. There were other disciples of Shambhala. Who knows what is the sign which conditions particularly their soul nature. Anyway, we have the appearance of dictators in different countries. Well, we've always had kings and emperors and monarchs of some kind, but now they seem to be emerging in greater potency. Certainly this was the case when this book was being written. We had Mussolini, We had Hitler. We had certain generals in Japan. We also had great leaders like Churchill and FDR, but we couldn't call them dictators because they respected the second-rate principle, the democratic principle. So we have the appearance of dictators in various countries at this time, and it's because of this fact also that in this present cycle, which is the antechamber of the New Age, you have the pronounced attitude of these dictators, pronounced attitude, an attitude which is so often ignored, but which has real racial value. I suppose they centralize in themselves certain objectives for their country, and using the shambolic power, they force these objectives into manifestation. Well, at one point, DK said that Hitler had lifted a distressed people upon his shoulders. Of course, it was perhaps before he showed his true colors. The industrialization of Russia, the Soviet Union, this was pushed through by Stalin. The change of values, a movement towards westernization in Turkey, was certainly pushed through by Ataturk, and this was much appreciated by the Tibetan, which was not the case necessarily in the other cases. It is the attitude which leads to a synthesis of the national life aims and intentions. The dictator working under the power of Shambhala is also working under the power of synthesis, and the number one is a number which overcomes duality and ends fragmentation. So rather than have the ineffectiveness of various competing ideologies, the dictator draws them all into one, dominated by his own sense of the direction which the national life should be taking. And there is no more external conflict under the impress of his will. There may be many things lying beneath the surface, but he regiments the energies of all the members of his nation, at least externally, into one united thrust forward, one direction. We saw this with Mao in China. His ideas were embraced or were forced upon hundreds of millions of people, and the nation took the single direction that he conceived of as important. So anyway, a typical instance of this attitude is that of Hitler. No matter what may be our personal opinion of him, there is no question that he has unified, produced fusion, and blended together the various elements of the German race. I guess this was written, you know, perhaps in the mid-30s, before the Tibetan began to speak of Hitler and his evil gang, who were invoking the material aspect of the Shambhala force without its blending with the love energy. This is Aquarian in nature, this fusion, this blending, this, I would almost say, standardization, because Aquarius is known for, at least in some of its lower forms of expression, to bring about standardization. This occurred with in Soviet Russia, it occurred in Germany, it's occurred under other dictatorships. It is possible to occur in the religious field where the rank and file of believers are entirely standardized, almost in a tribal sense, and unable to express their own approach to divinity. This is Aquarian nature, but in its lowest and most undesirable aspect. In other words, the Black Lodge forces, in a totalitarian manner, a certain way upon all people. So Black Lodge forces a way upon all in a totalitarian manner. There is no room for individuality. The individual and his preferences are crushed under the one dominating thought of the leader or his or the cadre that supports him. But it is Aquarian in the sense that at least it produces the fusion and blending together of many. So Aquarius represents the many, and their fusion, either voluntarily, which is preferable, or under a threat and dictatorship. We are trying to get away from this totalitarian tendency. What DK said about the Second World War was that wherever it might be found, it was not nations that had to be defeated necessarily, it was the totalitarian attitude. It is also of the nature of Leo. For the people who can produce these results of fusion and of blending and of synthesizing the forces of a group, a national force, have necessarily to be intensely self-aware. The people who can produce these have necessarily to be intensely self-aware. Of course, it can go so far, this self-awareness can turn into megalomania, as was the case of Hitler, who pronounced at the end of the Second World War, when all had fallen and Germany was utterly defeated, that the German people were not worthy of him. A megalomaniacal attitude. So this is the major characteristic of the Leo person, intense self-awareness, so that the boundary between self and others becomes clearly seen. And this, the first ray and the fifth ray coming through Leo, assists. The fifth ray helps create that sense of separation between self and others. We could almost call it isolation, and the first ray gives intense self-centralization. So this is the major characteristic of the Leo person. You know, so often the Libra person or the Pisces person, when Venus is involved, tend to look altruistically upon others and to actually care about others more than they care about themselves. But for the Leo person, the self looms large within the many contents of consciousness. Though, as evolution proceeds, it is the one self and the tiny personal self will fade to a point which eventually disappears. What part Leo may play in the personal horoscope of Hitler, I do not know, or have not investigated it. Surely he could. But it plays a very prominent part in the horoscope of his soul. And of course that leaves open the question of just how does DK investigate the horoscope of the soul of any individual. This is the promise that is held out to us in the future as we begin to change our identity towards soul identity and can actually see what the fundamental energies from a lasting, relatively lasting soul perspective may be. I would suggest to modern astrologers that they cast the horoscope of the dominant world figures at this time. What time would that be? Would that be Churchill? At this time, well, maybe they weren't listening so much to him, but he was in the he was in the background, ready to appear. He was a Sagittarius with late Virgo rising, or FDR. He was on the stage, also with Virgo rising, and an Aquarian. Hitler with the Sun in Leo and Libra rising. And Mussolini with the Sun in Leo and Scorpio rising. And later Mao came, and it looks like he had the Sun in Capricorn, with Capricorn rising, epitomizing in himself so much of what D. DK had said, for good and often for bad, of the sign Capricorn. So cast the horoscopes of the dominant world. There's that Leo word again. The dome of the head, the dominant note in music, the Leo note, as it's called, the dominant world figures at this time, with the planets which I've given you as the esoteric rulers. I mean, in Hitler's case, if you think about it, he had Libra rising, and Uranus was in Libra, causing a social revolution. Interesting, too, that FDR, born a bit earlier, had Virgo rising, the sign of the emergence of the Christ principle, the sign of the working man, the sign of the common man, with Uranus rising. He caused a great revolution in that respect. Although, we have to look at his rising planet. Well, you know, there are ways of doing this. Dane Rudyard has done a good job, I think, of analyzing the horoscope of Hitler and also of Mussolini. Those are the ones that I'm aware of. But anyway, using the esoteric rulers, because if they are dominant, they are advanced men, and then the esoteric rulers will apply. If they are dominant, they are necessarily advanced men, and so the esoteric rulers will apply. All advanced people and those of major importance are or are on or nearing the path of discipleship, despite their imperfections. You know, DK spoke of some personal limitations of Ataturk. What was Ataturk? He was sun in Pisces with the Scorpio rising, I think, as I'm recalling. He said it's well known that he would drank quite a bit. DK called this relatively minor personal limitations. Would he have said that of Churchill as well? Churchill drank quite a bit. You know, what's the sort of joke, the story, the legend that goes with him, that he would have a fifth of bourbon before noon? Whether this is true or not, bourbon, cigars, and all the rest, probably to desensitize him in some way, and yet you could feel that he was at certain times taking the entirety of Western civilization upon his shoulders and proving for a time its savior, proving himself to be the wall against the attack by those who represented the Black Lodge. So anyway, all advanced people and those of major importance are on or nearing the path of discipleship, and the influence of the esoteric planets is becoming, therefore, increasingly powerful. And this doesn't mean that we are going to dismiss the exoteric rulers. So I think I've done, and they are on Makara site, I think I've done the horoscope of Churchill. I don't know if I've done FDR. I've commented on it. I can't remember where I've done the horoscope of Hitler, but I've certainly commented on it as well. There, the Taurian energies were acting in a way that they would have contributed to humanity's re-initiation into the Earth, about which DK speaks in the Taurus chapter, as a dismal possibility, which would be extremely retarding for humanity, perhaps thousands of years of retardation, and one would enter the Aquarian Age, emphasizing its negative, totalitarian, regimentarian qualities. We are not yet escaped from this possibility because, at least as I see it at this time, the Black Lodge is on the move once again, and all the Plutonic worst of humanity is rising without necessarily the many having the psychology to understand it. So this is important because, you know, don't necessarily have to be like, you know, a spiritual disciple or something. Don't have to be religious in the conventional sense to be an advanced person or be of major importance. So, and basically what he is saying, if you are on or nearing the path of discipleship, you use esoteric rulers as well as the others. And this means that on the path of probation, the esoteric rulers are to be faded in. So then, even before the first initiation, the use of esoteric rulers, though not exclusively, is justified. So oftentimes little hints are given here and there which tell us how to proceed in our astrological work. So the influence of the esoteric planets is becoming, therefore, increasingly powerful. It might prove to these astrologers most illuminating and teach them much. You know how it often is. We look at that in Hitler's horoscope, personal horoscope. We look at that Mars-Venus conjunction that he has. And as Venus is the ruler of Taurus, we tend to emphasize it. You know, the conflict and confusion between soul tendencies and personal tendencies and the problems which can arise in human male-female relationships and so forth. But rather, it's that Uranus that really is the key to the esoteric rulership of his ascendant. And when it comes to the esoteric ruler of Taurus, it's Vulcan. And we cannot say in what sign Vulcan will be found, because the sun for Kittler is so early in Taurus that Vulcan could be in Taurus or it could be in Aries. But can anyone doubt, when one hears him speaking, or so often bellowing or screaming in the most emphatic manner, making his points like sledgehammers, that Vulcan is involved. I think maybe Mercury is in Aries, so I wonder if it's near there. But that's just a speculation. Anyway, the men of will are ruled by Vulcan, and Hitler was one such, and his some kind of incredible fanaticism went along with it. I used to think that he had a fourth-rate personality. Kind of reversed those things, you know. I thought, well, the fourth ray of Churchill is obvious, but I felt since Sagittarius was so strong, it might be the sixth ray of Sagittarius which was operative, but the fourth ray comes through as well. I think with Churchill, it was really, now that I look at it, the first and fourth rays, and with Hitler, more so the first and sixth rays. He expected, he himself was an utter fanatic, and expected the supreme fanaticism of his followers, and he pretty well got it, and I think his mind was on the fourth ray, I think. It might prove most illuminating to these astrologers and teach them much. The tendency to fusion, to blending, to amalgamation, and the spiritual counterpart of this unity is stronger today. So these are, you know, let's just call these Aquarian virtues. Fusion, blending, amalgamation, bringing together the many, synthesizing, unifying, and even synthesizing. You know, with unity you still have many diverse qualities. And the emphasis is sometimes on that diversity and their harmonious relationship. When you have synthesizing, a certain sameness is perceived. Now, a mistaken synthesis can easily turn into totalitarianism. So let's just say that synthesis, gone wrong, or primitively interpreted, can become totalitarianism. What's wrong with totalitarianism? Well, everyone is a unit of God, a word of God, a design within the Godhead. And in order for God to express itself, every unit has to be able to express its uniqueness within the social context. Totalitarianism obliterates that and substitutes for the God-representing expression of the many, the will of the one, who is in fact just a tiny part. So the will of the one suppresses itself upon the many, and only the one fragment gets to express itself, whether it's a leader, even a powerful leader, it's just a single being, expresses its particular view, and all the many do not express their individual gift, those gifts to be synthesized into the diversified and yet synthetic expression of the nation. So we have to be very careful with this Aquarian energy. It also represents atomic energy and a death through subtle forces, Devic forces, and also the forces of radiation and other lethal energies if these energies are not understood and people are exposed in the wrong way. So it could contribute to the fulfillment of the prophecy that man could die in a polluted land. It could be a land polluted by nuclear radiation. We're at a very important and decisive point here, and hopefully there is a kind of a guidance which will prevent our worst tendencies from taking hold. So this tendency to fusion, blending, amalgamation, and the spiritual counterpart of this unity is stronger today than heretofore. So there, in the spiritual counterpart of the unity, let's just say that divine variety will be respected. And freedom of expression will be not only tolerated, but promoted. Now, this we're having so much difficulty with today. There are groups in the world that believe that freedom of speech is a democratic perversion. And freedom of religion, of course, is not allowed. And freedom from fear, well, terrorize the enemy. Freedom from want, that's more general, and humanity does not experience that because of the selfishness of the very capable and the inability of the less capable to meet their needs. Now, what we need is the altruism of the very capable. I'll say, and the types which produce this exoterically, maybe esoterically is different, but esoterically must have Leo somewhere in a prominent position in the horoscopes of the sun controlling in some important house. There are different ways the same effect can be produced in various ways. So I sometimes look at this in my own horoscope, if you'll permit me to say, I don't have Leo in my horoscope, except that my sun is in the Leo decanate of Aries, and my sun is in the 10th house, and therefore the sun and the Leo decanate are in the 10th house, and in two internal charts, one representing the quickening chart and the other the conception chart, Leo is rising in both places. So I can identify with this Leo energy, even while not having Leo as the sun sign, or Leo rising. Also, my sun is in the Leo Dwadashamsa of Aries. So one way or another, the principle is that if certain things are to be accomplished, there are many ways that a particular effect can be produced. If you can't go down the main road, then there are many byways and lesser paths which you can take and accomplish something of the same purpose. So in our own little ways, we may be creators of unity and creators of what is being called here fusion, blending, amalgamation, a coming together for a common purpose. That's how I like to think of it. Coming together for a common purpose. And it just, the horoscope is versatile, and there are many pathways for particular energies to find their way through, also through the progressing planets and points, various energies which are not immediately explicit in the personal horoscope. Can find their way through, and also there are many subsidiary internal horoscopes. So if the horoscopes do not prove this, it is because the exact hour, moment, and day of birth has not been accurately ascertained. So we see these Aquarian virtues of fusion, blending, and amalgamation, but we realize that the central point that produces such things may be strongly conditioned by Leo or by the Sun. In this case, the Lord of the Sun, Solar Logos, is of course a lesser entity than the Lord of the constellation Leo, but can represent in some way channel those greater energies in a way that is still very effective in humanity. All right. This sign, Leo, I'm a little paranoid here after having turned off the recording button when I thought I had it on, and then had it on when I thought I had it off. this is not exactly a studio in which all of these programs are being produced, but they're being produced simply as they can be produced in order to reach as many people as may be interested in studying these things. This sign, Leo, is the fifth of the zodiac, which indicates that it is part of the mysterious number 10, the number of perfection. So then, what's the implication? Does that mean that every half is part of the meaning of an even number? It seems to. Or does it mean also, let us say, well, is 3 a part of the number 9? Is 6 a part of the number 9? You can't make a half of it, but you can have two points which are related. But certainly 3 is, because it's divisible, whereas and yielding a whole number, where 6 may not be, but certainly may be related. Well, I think the structure of the world will be shown to have a numerological basis. Even now, in nuclear physics, there is some simplification of thought along these matters. So what looked like the idle pastime of fatuous minds, as Isaac Asimov said, I'll kind of paraphrase, that some poor souls even indulge in numerology. He had a great pity, a sort of contempt and pity at the same time. I think it will be proved that there is a great foundation to numerological considerations when dealing with the structure of our world on the atomic level, and probably on the atomic level on many different dimensions of subtlety. So it's part of the mysterious number 10, the number of perfection. Now, it's the number of man. We talked about that a little earlier. 5 is sometimes called the number of man. 10 is called the number of man. Let me just review that. I wonder how I could do that in a way that was less, that didn't take too long. If I go here and I go to the AAB extracts, and maybe I can, say the number of man and look that up, how long would it take to come to something? Because I noticed that DK often uses the same phrase, and he says the number, and what I get out of that is that, okay, what do we have here? Maybe not immediately. The number of man. Not immediately. Let me go on one of these terrible searches, you know, from which one may never recover. Let's just look at it. Number of man. Oh, there are three. All right, I could have found that maybe without the word the. Nine is the number of man. Okay, well, that's one. Seven is the number of man. Five is the number of man. And 10 is that of perfection. So, five is the number of man. Treatise on White Magic, page 199. Going backwards. Seven is the number of man. Rays and the Initiations. Page 80. And I'd like to get rid of this. Something is wrong here. No. Can't do that. And then going back. And nine is the number of man. And that is page 264 of Esoteric Astrology. So we see here that Leo indicates that it, because it's five, it's a half of ten. I suppose one is related to two, as he tells us, two to four, three to six. He does tell us these things in terms of the rays. Therefore, four would be related to eight, five to ten, and six to 12, and seven to 14. That's maybe as far as we need to take it, but I suppose we could go on just a little bit and say that 8 is related to 16. Perhaps it's a combination of the Christ force and the petals of the throat center. And then 9 to 18, which is obvious in a way. 18 is the number of subplanes that are ruled by the moon, and 9 is the number of the fourth ray, of the third ray. Beyond that, I would not go. But those half relationships, I think, are very important. So 10 is the number of perfection, a relative perfection prior to entering a new cycle of progress. Elsewhere, he seems to tell us that 7 is the number of perfection, and 10 is the number of a greater perfection. So this links Leo, consequently, with Capricorn, and I think we can see how this would work, right? Let's look at some of the linkings here. Aries would be linked to Taurus because 1 is half of 2. Taurus would be related to Cancer, you know, via the moon, because 2 is half of 4. Gemini would be related to Virgo. We have a Mercurian connection there. And, yes, a Mercurian connection particularly, because 3 is half of 6. Cancer would be related to Scorpio because 4 is half of 8, and there's a strong connection of the 6th ray, whether it's via Neptune or Mars. And here we're talking about Leo being related to Capricorn because 5 is half of 10. Capricorn is the 10th sign and Leo is the 5th. And naturally, Virgo would be related to Pisces. There's many ways it's related to Jupiter and Neptune and Venus. Well, no. Yeah, Venus in a certain way, if every fall is an exaltation. Yes, these are opposite signs, and that's the first opposite we've had. We can't go to 7 because there's not 14 signs of the zodiac. But I think we can look at this particular numerological way of relationship and learn quite a bit. It's a relative perfection because no cycle is completely perfect. A relative perfection prior to entering into a new cycle of progress, which the number 10, which is 1, ever represents. In a way, Capricorn used to be the final sign, what's it called, a sign of periodic arresting, and seemed to be the end and the beginning. Scorpio, too, is once the end and the beginning. As I've said before, there are 12 zodiacal constellations, 12 lords who are the lords of those constellations, and usually 12 signs in our era, but there need not be 12 signs or concentrated influences, areas of concentrated influences, in all eras, because at a certain point, humanity may only be able to take in so many of those, only so many of those zodiacal constellational energies through certain signs. Other signs may have to be left out because there's no way to provide those concentrated areas of influence or areas of concentrated influence for humanity to receive them. So this links Leo consequently with Capricorn, the 10th sign of the zodiac, for it is in the process of initiation which for it is the processes of initiation which make the self-conscious person the group conscious individual. Now notice what he seems to be saying here. He connects all of the last three signs with group consciousness. Usually Aquarius is the sign of the group conscious, no such luck, group conscious individual. But here Capricorn is listed as such, and elsewhere Pisces is connected with group consciousness, though maybe of a deeper kind, is connected with group consciousness. Okay, consciousness. Right. So just because a particular sign usually has a particular form of words associated with it, like group consciousness, it doesn't mean that that's the only sign. So when you are an initiate, you are group conscious. You have begun to enter the realm where the group is realized as the fundamental fact. So when you are initiate, you are group conscious, especially the higher initiations. I am choosing these words with care and forethought. In other words, it is the process of initiation which makes the self-conscious person in Leo the group conscious individual, and Capricorn is the group conscious individual. I suppose there is a difference. Well, I'm going to say something here, a little bit strange perhaps. A difference between the group conscious individual and the group conscious group. Meaning that at a certain point one realizes that one is not an individual so much as the fact that one's identity is actually as the group. And maybe that's more, even more Aquarian in its nature. I am the group. In other words, let us look at a triangle here that we can consider. Leo, Capricorn, Aquarius, the self-conscious individual, self-conscious person, the group-conscious individual, Capricorn, and the group-conscious group, Aquarius. Okay. That is another step, you know. When we say I am a group-conscious individual, a member of the group, and I realize my identity and unity within the group, and the group is preeminent, that's a Capricorn thing to say. But when we begin to say and mean, I am the group, and my deeper identity is the group, not that I'm simply an individual in the group, but I am the group, then we've taken another step. Now, we can't put this into the political arena yet, can we? We'd be accused of something like, you know, some form of hyper-socialism, which is not so popular these days due to the perhaps failed experiment in Soviet Russia, which was, after all, a totalitarian experiment in which maybe a fine ideal was perverted. I guess it could not be said that the Stalinization of that experiment yielded a society in which we had from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. That's a bit more like early Christian communism. Nothing like the Soviet totalitarian system. Upon the reversed wheel, this is the eighth sign, you know, counting backwards. Let's see, where is he counting from? What do you think? If he's counting from Aries backward, it's the ninth sign. So he must be counting from Pisces. And I guess, you know, if I can count on my fingers, it's Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, Scorpio. Wait, am I wrong? No. Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, Sagittarius, okay. Scorpio, Libra, Virgo, Leo, yes. So he's counting from Pisces. And we have to notice what DK does, not only what he says. Sometimes go forth into matter, which is the sort of lower mantram of Pisces, is the starting point for this clockwise counting. And yet sometimes it is Aries. Notice that he began with Aries as the first sign of the zodiac, We didn't know which way he'd go. And he started counting backwards. So in a way, this is the ninth of the chapters that I've been commenting on, this chapter on Leo, not the eighth. So upon the reverse wheel, this is the eighth sign, the sign of the Christ and the indwelling reality. Let's just say that eight is the number of the Christ, and it seems to signify a higher self and a lower self, into which this higher self infuses itself, revealing a kind of duality which is a unity. An eight, to me, is a duality which is a unity. It is a one. It can get ever bigger, in a way, you know, ever bigger, or ever smaller, moving towards the infinitesimal, so it can move towards infinitude or towards the infinitesimal. The sign of the Christ and of the indwelling reality. In a way, the indwelling reality is always symbolized by the sun, that point within the center of the circle of manifestation. It therefore marks in this manner a new cycle, the cycle of the soul, let us say. Because we have for so many years been conditioned by the cycle of the elemental lives and of the personality, and finally enter a whole new dispensation when a higher meaning of Leo enters and we know that not only I am, but I am that. When self-consciousness is born, though perhaps not fully realized, as he tells us, at the moment of individualization, a new cycle begins. This is, individualization, though not self-realized individualization. Let's call it not self-realized individualization. Later he says the birth occurred somewhat in Leo, but also under the impulse of Sagittarius, and it's not till 3 million years later, under Leo, that the individual awakens to the fact that he is seemingly a distinct unit within all of these contents of consciousness that he is experiencing. So when self-consciousness is born, at the moment of individualization, a new cycle begins, a new kingdom, and man emerges from the animal kingdom, though having a vague and inchoate consciousness at first, and not really seeing himself as the emergent unit, not immediately. Nothing in nature appears to be sudden, and he often tells us if we seem to be waking up suddenly to a whole new level of consciousness, it has been prepared for a long time. This numerical significance links Leo with Scorpio. You see how he does this. If it's the fifth sign, you can count clockwise and make it the eighth, then Leo is related to the normal eighth sign. If you can count clockwise, and make it the ninth, then Leo is related to Sagittarius. Begin with Aries, make Leo the ninth, related to Sagittarius, the normal ninth. Begin with Pisces, make Leo the eighth, and related to Scorpio, the eighth. These are the two most prominent Herculean signs. Herculean signs. The eighth sign, the eighth sign of the zodiac. It, in an effective manner, Hercules, the sun god, the bright glory of Hera, achieves his most proclaimed victory in Scorpio, where he overcomes the Hydra. He also achieves a great victory in Leo, where he overcomes the Nemean lion, the king of beasts, the lower personality. So it's an effective manner. And you have, therefore, the triangle of Leo, Scorpio, Capricorn, involving humanity and indicating the three important crises in a man's career. Well, we just had Leo Libra Capricorn, and now we've got Leo Scorpio Capricorn. So let's, at one point, however, Libra Scorpio at least appears constellationally, no, Libra Scorpio appears constellationally to have been one sign, because Libra, the constellation Libra, that triangle, were the claws of the Scorpion. So remember that, why can't I spell? Remember that we just had, for signs of crises, Leo, Libra, and Capricorn. Well, you see how he's done this. He's taken the number 5. Look at the derivation. The number 5 is half of 10, so Leo is related to Capricorn. The number 5, let's look at it this way. Leo is the 8th sign, beginning with Pisces and moving clockwise. So Leo is related to the 8th counterclockwise sign, which is Scorpio. So you have a triangle. Now, how could we use this principle and see what else he might derive, just for fun, you know, because we have to extend by implication. Aries is the first sign. I wonder if we can do that. So is related to Taurus. But Taurus is, let's see, what can we say? It is, it is in a way the 11th sign, is also the 11th sign, beginning our counting at Pisces counterclockwise. So Aries, Taurus, and Aquarius, the counterclockwise, beginning our counting at Pisces, excuse me, clockwise, that's what we need to do. So Aries, Taurus, and Aquarius, the counterclockwise 11th sign. Now I suppose we could have begun, or we could have begun with Aries and found that Taurus was 12 signs from it, and thus the connection would have been Aries, Taurus, and Pisces. Very interesting, this. And, you know, I wonder, is it profitable to do this? I mean, we can come up with certain triangles. I can think of ways in which Aries, Taurus, and Pisces would be closely related to each other because they are signs of sequence, you know. They have to do with the beginning of two types of wheels and two types of directions. One begins in Aries and lands in Pisces by proceeding through Taurus. One begins in Aries and lands in Taurus by proceeding through Pisces. So these define the two major wheels. But we have, if we have, let's see, Aries, Taurus, and Aquarius, we have Aquarius as the sign of hierarchy, Taurus as the sign of the new group of world servers, and Aries inaugurating the new age in which both of them will be prominent. I mean, there are ways. If we'll try a few more of these, you know, we'll try a few more of these and see whether they can be profitable. We can, of course, make them profitable. But I think what the important thing is to understand, when the Tibetan drops a hint and shows a method of procedure, as he just has, with Leo being, in a way, the 8th sign, and Leo being half of Capricorn, that the three signs form a triangle through numerical resonance. So what we're going to try to do here is find triangles based upon numerical resonance. Well, let's spell it. Okay. Now we could do that. Well, I'll tell you what. I think we're at the end of this little section on Leo. We are. So this is the end of Esoteric of EAA 89, Section A, beginning on some page or other. Page 287, is it? Yes, page 287. Beginning on page 287. And we will continue with Esoteric Astrology 89, section B, page 287. That's what we'll do, and we're in an interesting derivation. We're trying to extend DK's methods, show how they can be, find a method, find a hint, find how he does something, find how he combines things, and then try it yourself. That's what we're trying to do here. So let me stop this for just a moment.